Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming to share this evening with us tonight. And welcome to the library. My name is Victor Sjöberg. I'm the library director. And I'm happy that so many made it out this evening. We are going to conduct our candidates forum this evening. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to do our candidates forum, and we have prepared some questions for the candidates. Both candidates will be answering each question. We are also going to have an opening statement and a closing statement. After the questions that we have prepared, there's also going to be an opportunity to take an intermission and complete your own question back there if you haven't already. I know a lot of people have already submitted questions. It's going to be important to have questions that kind of tackle other areas than the ones we already covered in our prepared questions, obviously, so there might be some redundancy. So not every question will be asked. Another important thing is that all questions need to be presented to both candidates. So I also want to let you know that this is being broadcasted on KRFY this evening, and I believe it's also going to be archived. And with that, I want to introduce our candidate, Stacy Rodriguez, and Susan Shea. And I also want to introduce our moderator for the evening, Ken Wood. He is a past Rotary president and a very involved community member that has agreed to facilitate this for us this evening. So thank you so much, Ken, and welcome again, everyone.
All right. Let's see if mine's working here. Can everybody hear me okay? All right, I'll speak loud. So, all right, well, first of all, thank you, everyone, for being here. This is a great turnout. It just shows the passion that we all have for this community gem. This is an amazing resource we have in the Sandpoint community. So thank you all for being here. And thank you especially to our two candidates. I'd like to start with the opening remarks, and I'd like to start with Stacy. Stacy, you have 3 minutes. Should be good. You're good.
Thank you, Ken. Hi. Thank you for coming. My name is Stacy Rodriguez. I know I don't look like a Rodriguez, I look like an O'Hara, but I married that cute Cuban guy over there, so now I'm Rodriguez. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and then I moved to San Diego when I was in college. I went to grad school and law school there. I'm a married mom of two daughters, 30 and 17 and a half almost, and we moved to Bonner County in 2016 when my husband and I decided that we just didn't want to raise our kids in Southern California anymore. After law school, I turned down lots of offers, lucrative offers, for private law firms, but that wasn't my interest. I wanted to pay back my community, and so I went to work as a deputy district attorney for the San Diego County District Attorney's Office. And I spent almost two decades there, handling thousands of cases, trying 100, everything ranging from basic DUIs to multiple murders. For many years, I was the supervisor of a division of the Family Protection Division, which prosecuted child molest, child abuse, and domestic violence cases. After I retired, I wasn't quite done with law enforcement yet, so I started teaching, and I taught a class I developed called From the Crime Scene to the Courtroom to law enforcement officers throughout the country, and a writing class that I created for California probation officers. When I arrived in Bonner County, I admit I was a bit nervous because I'd left so many friends behind and also so much access to books. Besides God and family, books are my lifeblood. I love books. So after I got my daughter signed up for 4-H Horse, I went looking for books. And I found, as Ken said, this amazing facility. I'd already had the teaching bug. I'd been homeschooling our youngest daughter since third grade. She's a junior now. And I began to tutor here at the library, and for about 4 years or so, I've taught English, writing, math, reading, whatever they needed me to do. My two brothers and I grew up with a single mom who worked nights, and the library was pretty much my partial home. I spent a lot of time within these walls, and I probably check out in excess of 100 books a year. I really am a reading nut. My book friends call me the book muse. But I need and I want our community library to be a place that's a safe and welcoming environment for all of our Bonner County citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stacy. You could leave it on. I think I just leave it on.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, Susan.
We'll see if I need a tech tutor. I think I know one. Hi everyone. Thanks for coming out tonight. My name is Susan Shea. I'm running for re-election to the East Bonner County Library Board of Trustees. This country was founded on the principles of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States reinforces these principles by guaranteeing that every person in this country has the right to speak, publish, read, and view what they wish without government interference or limitations. The library's mission is to provide free and open access to information and ideas. It is legally and professionally obligated to provide all members of the community with free and equitable access to a diverse range of library resources and services that is inclusive regardless of approach or format. As a library trustee, I support these ideals as part of the rights guaranteed by the First Amendment. I have lived and worked in Bonner County for 30 years. I'm currently employed as an accountant with a local CPA firm. I have used my accounting experience over the last 6 years to help the board better understand the financial aspects of the library. As a result, the board has declined to take the 3% annual levy increase for the last 5 years. The individual Bonner County taxpayer saw a reduction in library taxes for each of those years with an increase in services and programs. I'm also able to ask financial questions that the other board members would not necessarily know to ask. If I am reelected, I will continue to serve the community with dedication and commitment and to defend the library against any challenges to the First Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, both of you. All right, let's start with the first question, and I'm going to rotate each time. So, Susan, why are you interested in serving on the library board for a second term? Did I?
They have really great tech tutors. We have such a great library, and I want to be a part of making sure it stays great and accessible to all. I am passionate about expanding the services the library provides and its involvement in the community while remaining fiscally responsible. I have found that my financial expertise has been an asset to the board, and I want to continue filling that role. Thank you.
Stacy, why are you interested in serving in the library board?
Good question, Ken. Why would someone who loves books, reading, and teaching children feel compelled to get involved in running the library rather than just enjoying it. A few years ago, I began noticing some things at the library that caused me to take pause. It started with books being promoted on the display racks right when you came through the door and throughout the library, the ones upstairs by the information desk up there and along that window that's up there. And sometimes they were related to really interesting general topics, women in science, haunted mysteries, rock and roll. But increasingly more often, the displays reflected what appeared to me to be a kind of one-sided political agenda, one that didn't really match the values held by most of Bonner County's voters. Often, when I entered the library, the first thing I saw were lots of books supporting Democratic politicians or progressive themes that seemed overemphasized throughout the library. Rarely did I see a display that showed a conservative author or that talked about conservative viewpoints. And I'm not saying that all books that have a left slant are bad, merely that a community library serving all of Bonner County must have a balance. When I traveled to St. Paul last year for the National Speech and Debate Championships, naturally, I had to go searching for an indie bookstore to get some books. And when I looked online, I saw that pretty much all of them had a pretty serious progressive slant, as was their right to do as a private business, and my right to go or not to go. But I don't want my county library, supported by my tax dollars, when I go in it, I don't want to be able to identify the political ideology of the staff members. As time went on, I became aware that our library was beginning to house several books that, but for the exemption granted by state law, would be deemed obscenity, harmful to minors, for their graphic visual displays of sexual acts involving children. I learned that most, if not all, of these books were recommended by the American Library Association, the ALA. This is a private Chicago-based entity whose newly elected president from Idaho, starts July 2023, identifies as a Marxist lesbian who is determined to queer the library. Her words, not mine.
10 seconds.
I think it's time the library board had a fresh face and a new perspective added to the mix so that all our voters have a voice in what we want our library to become. Thank you.
Stacy, back to you again. If elected, what experience and skills will you bring to the board?
First and most important, I'm a mom. And mothers are hardwired to make sure that their children are safe beyond all things. I need to know that mothers can come into this library with their children and not have to follow them around like a shadow, making sure they don't pull a book off the shelf that's going to show them images they can't unsee. Second, I'm a teacher for both adults and children, and teachers seek to provide their students with information and materials that will engage, educate, and inspire them. I spend a good portion of every week with teenagers. Between homeschooling, speech and debate, and mock trial instruction for a local homeschool group. And my goal is always to reveal to them the magic that a love of learning can bring. I think that should be the library's goal as well. Third, I'm a lawyer. I have supervised teams of attorneys and staff. I can write and review grants. I both understand and can explain the nuances of business contracts as well as statutes and statutory law. I have studied constitutional law in depth, and I will be able to assist the board as it navigates any legislation that's directed toward and affecting libraries and how they deal with the communities and their resources. I have helped draft legislation, and I believe I can coordinate with our local state representatives about how to tailor any legislation that might affect our library before it goes to committee for review. And finally, I am a strong advocate for children, as you may have guessed. I have fought both to educate, protect, and inspire them during my career as a prosecutor, my time as a teacher, my experience here as a tutor. And I believe it's the obligation of every community adult to protect and not harm our most precious resource, our children. Thank you.
Susan, same question. If elected, what experience and skills will you bring to the board?
I have 6 years of collaborative experience working with a highly functional board and bring 45 years of experience, of financial and accounting experience that no other trustee has. During those 6 years, I have helped the board better understand the financial aspects of the library, and upon my recommendation, we declined the annual 3% levy increase. I am an integral part of helping the board to make fiscally responsible decisions. Thank you.
Susan, back to you again. Do you believe that certain library materials should be banned or restricted? Why or why not?
I believe in every person's freedom to read what they wish, which is guaranteed by the First Amendment and reaffirmed by the Supreme Court again and again. I believe in the personal freedom of individuals to decide which books are appropriate for themselves and their families based on their personal values. This has been my position since the beginning of my term and will continue to support everyone's unfettered access to library materials. Thank you.
Stacy, do you believe that certain library materials should be banned or restricted? Why or why not?
According to PEN America, a supporter of the ALA, quote, if a parent complains and the book is about a book and the book is placed on a higher shelf, it can be claimed that's now a banned book, end quote. So much for Banned Book Week. No one, certainly not me, is advocating for banning any books in this library. The idea this question raises in my mind, though, is what has changed since we were kids that's even causing us to be here and discuss this? Libraries used to reflect their community's values and morals. No parent had to worry about their child wandering through the library stacks unattended, because there was nothing like genderqueer on the shelves for them to pull off accidentally. Adults back then did not need to be told by the state legislature that you should not show obscene materials to children, especially images of sexual activity, even if it was contained in someone's memoir. In fact, on March 23rd of this year, even the managing director of the ALA, Nadine Farid Johnson, admitted in a congressional hearing that no, we shouldn't be showing Penthouse to first graders. For the past several years, our library has increasingly adopted the radical dictates pushed by the ALA and supported by a minority of its voters. They argue it's free speech, but obscenity has never, under the law of the United States, been protected by the First Amendment. Until recently, people never questioned the restriction of obscene materials being given to children, not stores, not movies, not Blockbuster. An obscene book doesn't become unobscene just because it's on a library shelf. It's allowed there due to a statutory exemption, Idaho Code Title 18, 1517 sub D. And it was enacted back in the 70s to allow sex ed books into health science classes, but now it's being used as a cudgel to promote an agenda and to sexualize children that no one ever could foresee. But here's the good news. The solution is simple and has been suggested to the board many times over the last year.
30 seconds.
An age-controlled area where materials meeting the legal definition of obscenity are housed. Any minor could check out any book in the age-controlled section with the permission slip from a parent or a guardian. And while many at board meetings tell us it's the parents' responsibility, then why does the library have no age limit on their unattended children policy? An age-controlled section requiring parental permission protects both the child and the library. It's a win-win.
Thank you, Stacy. I want to say thank you both candidates to staying within the time frames. You're well prepared. Stacy, next question for you. House Bill 314 passed in the House and the Senate before ultimately being vetoed by the governor. House Bill 314 would have allowed parents to sue the library for $2,500 if their child was to access a book that they found inappropriate. What is your stance on this proposed legislation?
Well, Ken, the first thing is that the question is inaccurate, where it states that HB 314 would have allowed a parent to sue a library for $2,500 if their child were to access a book they found inappropriate. And here's where my understanding of how to read and analyze statutes as a lawyer will be of great service to the library board. If 314 had proposed something so broad as written in this question, a book that parents found inappropriate, there would be as many potential claims as there were parents. Some parents would find true crime inappropriate. Some would find romance novels inappropriate. The law proposed nothing of the sort. HB 314 amended current law to add a new section, 1517 capital B, which allowed parents to file a civil claim, that means money only, against a school or a public library if they provide material harmful to minors as defined by statute, not by the parents' feelings. If an employer or agent of the library gave or made available material harmful to minors, or, keep this in mind, if the institution failed to take reasonable steps to restrict access to material harmful to minors, then and only then can the parent recover the $2,500 in damages, again, against the institution, not the library. So HB 314 essentially removes the exemption that community and school libraries have enjoyed from the obscenity laws as they relate to minors. The United States Supreme Court has made clear that obscenity is not protected by the First Amendment. This would basically subject libraries to penalties like anybody else, but they wouldn't be subjected to any kind of criminal penalty because you can't put a library in jail. The real question we should be asking, and parents are asking, is what possible purpose would our library have in providing materials that meet the statutory definition of obscenity, harmful to minors, to our kids? I think a bill like HB 314 will become Idaho law in the near future. It was 6839 total count for against. And as a library trustee with my legal expertise, I would help guide the library's policies and make sure our library was never subjected to that penalty.
15 seconds.
The bill identified and concerned parents suggested that we have a restricted age-controlled section. Legal problem solved. And I can help the board solve this problem here in Bonner County, not in Boise. Thank you.
Susan, same question. House Bill 314 passed in the House and the Senate before ultimately being vetoed by the governor. HB 314 would have allowed parents to sue a library for $2,500 if the child were to access a book they found inappropriate. What is your stance on this proposed legislation?
I agree with Governor Little's comments that the ambiguity of the law would have unintended consequences for libraries and Idaho residents. Allowing parents to collect $2,500 will only increase the cost of operating the library, which would be passed on to taxpayers. It would also potentially cause the library to restrict access to all minors. Thank you.
Susan, What additional concerns do you believe the board should address?
The board needs to continue to protect the community's freedom to read, to plan and budget for long-range capital projects, and to continue expanding programs and services based on community interest and without increasing our local tax burden.
Stacy, what additional concerns do you believe the board should address?
Thank you. As I said earlier, I believe our children are the lifeblood of our future, and to that extent, the library should be doing everything it can to join community partners and help them overcome obstacles in their way to bright and happy futures. First, according to a 2023 report, Sandpoint High School is in the bottom 50% of all Idaho schools. 35% of its students lack reading proficiency. And get this, 74% of their students lack math proficiency, 74%. I think the board should evaluate the cost of and address the issue of how to expand our tutoring services to assist with these deficiencies, coordinating with the high school to look into maybe having some on-site hours at the school and helping them have extra help right before exams. Second, since our homeschool community in Bonner County is so robust, I think the board should consider purchasing and having several of the major homeschool curricula available in the library. There's Institute for Excellence in Writing, IEW, several math programs like Singapore Math, Saxon Math, Life of Fred, Lively Latin, just to add a few. It would be nice to reach out to this underserved but taxpaying community to help them meet their needs. Third, in keeping with my student-oriented theme, I'd like to see the board develop policy to assist with providing books and tutoring at the juvenile detention facility, which we currently do not do. They really, really would like some help. Thank you.
Stacy, and this is our final question, prepared question. What are your budgetary priorities, or what budgetary priorities do you believe are essential?
I believe it's essential to keep the majority of the library's budget fostering its key mission to provide a safe environment and the resources to help provide and foster a love of reading and to improve literacy, particularly for those who might not have access. In fulfilling this mission, the library board should be attendant not to let spending get out of control. Recently, the board approved large increases in merit pay, COLA allowances, increased healthcare premiums, and the addition of vision care for staff that totaled close to $500,000. Also recently, the board approved, from only two completely filled out bids, a $243,000 Mercedes-Benz bookmobile, whose expected lifespan, if well maintained, is only 10 years. We now have a virtual reality experience for patrons and a garden. And maybe these are all really reasonable budgetary priorities for the library. I'm obviously limited to what I can read in the minutes and the board packets online. But I've also observed over the last few years that many of the books I check out are in a state of sad repair. The bindings are pulled away from the pages. Pages are bent, pages are stained, pages have markings on them. If you check out a CD or a DVD, they're often scratched and they skip or they won't play, or my horrible situation, it got stuck in my CD player in my car. It took an act of God to get it out. I hate to see all the shiny new things distract the board from the core mission of the library. Thank you.
Susan, final question. What budgetary priorities do you believe are essential?
I believe that the most important thing is to continue saving taxpayer dollars. I have done this over the last 6 years and guarantee I will continue to do so in the future. The expansion of the library into the community as a community resource and a community center is one of the highlights of this facility, and I'd like to continue to see outreach and continued collaboration in that area. Thank you.
On that note, we are going to take a 5-minute intermission. If you have questions you'd like to ask, please turn them into the basket back there, and we will resume in 5 minutes.
And please remember to ask.
Started. If everybody could sit down, please. Thank you, everybody. Always does. Thank you, everybody. We're going to get started here. All right. Thank you, everyone. Okay. So they are, I believe we have 8 questions that we're going to ask. Same format. You'll each have 3 minutes to speak on the question, and we'll take it here. Let's see. Who went last? I'm sorry. Susan, I thought that was right. Okay. Susan, the library is funded by taxpayers. Please share your thoughts regarding community taxpayer input to the materials purchased and kept and keeping those materials aligned with the community's needs and values.
The community has the opportunity to request any sort of material that they want. There's a form on the website that you can just go out there and say, please get this book for me, and the fulfillment people will handle procuring that book and letting you know when it has arrived for you to check out. If there's no community input, then the library selects books based on recommendations through various library organizations and bestsellers and the like. So if there is no community involvement, they do their best to fulfill your needs kind of sort of based on what the rest of the world is reading, so to speak. They also, if a book never gets checked out, they can say, well, nobody wants that book, so they don't request that kind of material anymore, and it's just removed from the shelf. So I can't tell you how much of our collection is patron requested or just something that we decided to procure. I'm not that actively involved in the daily operations. No trustee is quite that involved in the daily operations, but hopefully there's a lot of community requested books in the library. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Stacy, same question. The library is funded by the taxpayers. Please share your thoughts regarding community taxpayer input to the materials purchased and keeping those materials aligned with the community needs and values.
Thank you. First and foremost, this is a public library. The Board of Trustees is elected by the voters, and they direct policy for the library. It's one of their jobs. But I think that the library and the Board of Trustees need to remember that they're here to serve our community and our voters, and not an agenda from some company in Chicago. The board needs not to subordinate their voters' desires for books, particular books, whether on the shelves or off, to their own. Parents have been trying to voice politely and respectfully their feelings about these graphic sexually containing books. And I know some people think they're not here. Oh, they're here. And they'd make a sex worker blush. The majority of our voters do not want their 8-year-old or 9-year-old to open a book and see little Johnny giving little Georgie a you-know-what graphically displayed. I can think of no legitimate interest for that. And as a career prosecutor who spent a lot of time prosecuting child molesters, there's barely a case where a child molester hasn't tried to indoctrinate and groom a child who's to become their victim without displaying graphic sexual images to them. We are the grown-ups here. It didn't even used to be a question that we were to protect our children. And I know that that's what you really want to do. I know that you wouldn't even think for one moment of taking a book like that to your friend's house with their minor children and saying, hey, look at the book I bought for your son. You just wouldn't do that. And it doesn't make the book, as I said before, it's not unobscene just because it's in the library. It's just exempted. So I think that the community is trying to tell the library as best they can, hey, we don't want to ban books. We want to accommodate the books in a way that's safe for children and safe for the library. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to remind the crowd, please, no direct interaction. Please don't interrupt them. They prepared very hard for this. I'd like to let them speak. Thank you. Yep, let's just go back to you. So, Stacy. Should the library have children's drag story hour?
All right, anyone who can guess my answer, I'll give you 50 cents. No. 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 There's that interaction again. So, what is a drag queen? A drag queen is a grown man who wants to dress as a woman. It's not transgender usually, so he's still got the package there in his little tights and whatever he's wearing. Little kids are small. They're sitting on the floor as Mr. Drag Queen gyrates around with his male parts hanging out where little kids can see. And I don't care, so you may not know, but well, you won't know, but back in the day, I tried the infamous Butcher Brown. And in doing so, because he had butchered so many transgender people, I've probably interviewed and spoken with and spent more time with transgender people than a transgender person. And I can tell you that they do not think this is cool. Why would you want, here we're back to the question. What possible purpose does it serve to sexualize children? I got to grow up. I didn't even know men had pubic hair till I was like in 11th grade and saw a National Geographic. Lived life just fine with that innocence. Why? Why do they need to see male parts and men dressed up like women when they're women when they're 7 years old or 8 years old or 9 years old? Is there educational value in letting your little kid know, hey, men like to dress up as women and throw their package in your face? I don't think so. And I don't think most of the voters of Bonner County think so either.
Susan, same question. Should the library have children's drag story hour?
I'm sure my answer won't be quite that exciting. I can only say I can't imagine that this community has that kind of interest. The library is here to serve the community and their interests in what the library wants to offer. If there was an interest in this community, enough of an interest in this community that people wanted to attend that event, I think I would support that as a way to support what the community wants. Like I said, I'm not aware that there's that kind of interest in this community, though, so hopefully it's not an answer that we have to realistically deal with in the near future. Thank you.
Susan, are you in favor of spending nearly $250,000 on a Mercedes-Benz bookmobile?
The Mercedes-Benz bookmobile is a Mercedes utility van. We, as a board, looked at purchasing a new bookmobile in 2017 when I was first elected to the board. At that point in time, we chose not to. We were having issues with keeping our current bookmobile on the road. It was more and more frequently off the road, expensive repairs. We couldn't drive it in active winter weather. So we tabled it at the time. When it came around again, we approved it on the basis that it's basically the third branch of our library. It services people in the outlying communities that can't get to the library easily or don't come in the winter. The current bookmobile that we have is 23 years old and has 163,000 miles on it. It's just not reliable. We can't find people who are willing to drive it. So yes, I support replacing our current bookmobile with a $234,000 bookmobile to continue to serve our patrons in the outlying areas of the district.
Stacy, same question. Are you in favor of spending nearly $250,000 on a Mercedes-Benz bookmobile?
Well, Ken, my husband says tires and wires are things that are beyond my comprehension, and he does it in the nicest way. However, I have the invoice here for said Mercedes-Benz bookmobile, which was $243,348.68. It's about 7 pages long, the Tech Ops specialty vehicles invoice. I can only assume that maybe the library had to put forth such a detailed proposal to get such a beast. But even on the TOSV website, there are multiple vehicles that aren't Mercedes-Benz vehicles. You can get a chassis for a bookmobile, it's my understanding, and still get a lot of things on it. Obviously, with elderly population, me not included, we might want a lift for that bookmobile, and you might want people to be able to come inside it, especially if we were able to expand to all the senior care centers that are here in the community and not just a couple. So, to answer the question, maybe it was the only show in town. But I also know from reading the board packets that they sent out an RFP for bids, posted the bid. They got 4, but 2 people didn't bother to fill out all the stuff they needed to, so that was down to 2, and they picked this one. If I were going to spend $250,000, I'd want more than just 2 people giving me an offer. Just seems like that's what I do, even if I had to wait a little bit to get a few more bids to come in. So I certainly am not saying that the board spent too much money. I'm just more looking at the way they did and how few options they had, and was it the right time? I understand the bookmobile that we had was old, but was this the only and most financially responsible choice? Thank you.
Stacy again. What improvements to the library's financial status do you recommend?
Well, there's a good question. Improvement to financial status. Well, from reading through all these minutes, like a year of minutes and board packets. It'll make your eyes bleed. I'm going to say that. The library's pretty flush. And I believe, I mean, flush with cash. And I don't know, because I'm not privy to a lot of information, and there's just not enough time to study it all, whether that cash is levy-based, grant-based, taxpayer-based. I don't know the division of those numbers. Although I do know that Victor hired an auditor to separate out the levy money from other money so he could spend it appropriately on things it was supposed to be spent on. So I don't know that there's a need to bring more money into the library, maybe more keep it coming, if, especially if there are no more levies or we don't use the levy money. So I guess that's a question where it seems like we're doing, well, we've got enough money. So other than what we're doing, I don't know that we need to change that at this time.
Thank you. Susan, same question. What improvements to the library's financial status do you recommend?
Over the last 6 years, the board has gained a better understanding of how the levy process works, how the budget process works, to a point where we kind of get it now. So going forward, we're going to continue to refine that process and refine our understanding of where the money comes from, the division of monies that was recently done by our auditors to pull out levy money from other sources of money. That designates where we can spend that money. Levy money can only be spent on the operations of the library. Any other money we can spend for any other purpose. So it gives us a way to look at our cash in the bank, what we want to plan for, say, capital improvements, whatever we need. We now know which money is designated just for operations. So we have a better understanding of the cash and how the whole process works. I just think we need to keep fine-tuning that. Thank you.
Okay. Susan, are you endorsed by or otherwise endorsed by either the Bonner County Democrats or the Bonner County Republican Central Committee?
I am not.
Easy question.
I had to think about it, though.
Stacy, are you endorsed by or otherwise in? Are you endorsed by or otherwise endorsed by either the Bonner County Democrats or the Bonner County Republican Central Committee?
I'm a visual learner.
No worries.
Any committee, at least not to my knowledge. So,
Stacy, with the influx of homeschoolers, how will you help the library meet their needs?
Well, I won't repeat what I said before, except to the extent that I really think we should get some homeschool curricula into the library, multiple sets. Some of the homeschooling families, they're paying taxes to the library, they're paying taxes for the schools they don't use, and I know it's their choice, but still, their kids are users of the library, and how nice it would be to be able to come and have some sets of curricula available, especially to families that maybe had financial issues, but such that it made it really costly for them to buy 1, 2, 3, 4 sets of homeschool materials. And it would be a great opportunity for the library to invite homeschool families to come to some kind of forum and talk about curricula. And then ultimately, obviously, the board and or Victor would decide which ones would be brought in because they'd want to get the most bang for their buck. But I think it would be a great opportunity for the library. Thank you.
Susan, same question. With the influx of homeschoolers, how will you help the library meet their needs?
We currently have in-house programs for homeschoolers. My knowledge of the homeschool program is very limited. I know we've talked about it as part of the board. We do not at this time carry or offer curriculum to homeschoolers because they have a limited shelf life and because of the cost, as Stacy mentioned. So it's the curriculum itself is not something that the library feels is in the best interest of the budget and the community. I'm sure there are other ways that we can serve them through a collaborative or an outreach program, which we can certainly look into from that perspective.
All right, final question. Who would or should determine the appropriateness of matter or declare the label obscene to materials being adopted by the library?
Say that again.
Yep.
Thank you.
Who would or should determine the appropriateness of a materials or declare the label obscene to the materials being adopted by the library?
Currently, there is nothing in the library that meets the definition of pornography according to the Miller test, which is part of the Supreme Court's decision on pornography. Every parent that visits the library has their own set of values and principles for their families and for their children. Ultimately, the parental rights should be the ones that can decide whether the material is appropriate for their children. I think that answered it. Thank you.
Stacy, again, who would or should determine the appropriateness of matter or declare the label obscene to materials being adopted by the library?
Thank you. Well, first we look to the statutes. We have a statute that defines what obscenity is and what harmful to minors means, so we don't have to invent it. And Susan mentioned pornography, and even though they're close cousins, legally pornography is not the same as obscenity. So remember, the things in the library, like genderqueer, are obscene, but they're exempted because of state law at this time. I believe that there is, I'm not privy to it, but I know there's a selection committee, people in the library staff that choose books and decide which books to pick. I feel confident that as experienced librarians, they probably have a pretty good idea of which books that parents are going to think are inappropriate for their kids. With that knowledge and the obscenity statute, they can probably figure out which books need to be looked at in a more careful manner. We have suggested, and the parents have suggested, a really good way to take care of this. Not banning them, just putting them in an age-controlled area. If the library has any doubt, they can put them in the area, and we can come up with some kind of process to petition that, just like you can petition to have a book removed. You might be able to petition to have it removed from the age-controlled area. But the board should be given diverse opinions, not just one side. I really encourage you to go look at the American Library Association website and articles that they publish. If you think that your children's best interest is in their best interest, you are completely wrong. And you can't have it both ways. You can't say it is absolutely the parents' responsibility to supervise which books their children get if A, those books are randomly in the library, just on shelves, anywhere, And we have a policy here that has no age limit on unattended children. So how can you have it both ways? It's your job to supervise, but your kid can come here as young as four, as long as they don't take up too much staff time, and hang out all day, and the books are just there. It seems like such a win-win situation. It's not, these materials aren't First Amendment protected. And so the staff can set up, and Victor can help set up a process whereby book selection has input from the community, from the staff, and the board can get diverse opinions on materials. And Victor breaks the tie. He's the library director. So if after hearing from people of both camps about a particular book, and there's a tie, then Victor decides whether it should go into the age-controlled section or not.
Time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, both of our candidates. I think we owe you both a round of applause. This last section, we will do a three-minute closing, final thoughts, etc. Because we started with you, Stacy, I'm going to start with Susan to finish off.
Thanks again, everybody, for coming tonight. I appreciate that you all have such a great interest in our library. It is not acceptable to forfeit just a little bit of your First Amendment rights in a perceived effort to protect the children in our community. A parent already has the right to decide which books are appropriate for their own children based on their personal values and should not have to abdicate their parental rights to my opponent and the group of people she represents. Their proposed compromise to create a restricted section to place materials that her group of people object to is censorship and a violation of the First Amendment. There is nothing in the library that meets the definition of pornography. There may be materials offensive to some or even many, but offensive is not pornographic. The library has clear boundaries for the children's library and young adult fiction, which is downstairs, and adult fiction, which is upstairs. When children are appropriately supervised within the library, it's unlikely they will accidentally stumble across material their parent would feel is not appropriate for them. I am qualified, I am experienced, and I am fiscally conservative. I ask you to stand with me for you and your family's First Amendment rights by voting for me, Susan Shea, on May 16th for your library trustee. Thank you.
Stacy, your closing comments.
Thank you. No matter how many times people say that obscenity, not pornography, is protected by the First Amendment, that's how many times they'll be wrong. It's just wrong. And if we're going to have a debate, we need to deal with facts, not wishes. Susan said the library is here to serve the community's interest. And if there were enough interest, then I would support the drag shows. Well, what if the community wanted stripper poles? Are we going to have stripper poles in the library because the bulk of the community wants it? I don't think so. We can't be, I think it was G.K. Chesterton who said, we can be open-minded, but not so open-minded, our brains fall out. This is a public library of Bonner County, not of Sandpoint. And I guess my people, as referred to by Susan, are people that don't want their children seeing graphic sexual images in the library without being in a proper section. And as I've mentioned quite a few times, this legislation is going to pass. So let's get ahead of it. Let's solve the library's problems. It's not going to mean that books can't come into the library. They can. Our kids will be protected, though. So please, remember me on May 16th. and cast your vote for Stacey Rodriguez, not O'Hara, Stacey Rodriguez. And let our community know what kind of library you want to have for your children. Thank you.
All right. Again, thank you very much to both our candidates. And thank you for the crowd for being here, supporting your local library. Again, Election Day is May 16th. Remember to vote. Thank you, everybody. This concludes.
Thank you.
And thank Victor for hosting this community forum. Thank you, Victor.